This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson. And today I actually have my first podcast that's more of a murder mystery podcast, which is going to be very new for the viewers. If you've ever been listening, this is going to be something totally new. My guest today is Sharon Forrest. And she is coming here to tell her story about something that is actually probably a national story at this point.
It did make national news 14 years ago.
But before we get into that, you've requested Michelob Ultra. And my wife said, she goes, what are you guys drinking today? Because she dropped me off to go do some errands. And I said, Michelob Ultra. She goes, oh, that's a great beer for the river. And I go, I go, actually, funny thing is this kind of has to go with the river a little bit. So
this is what we drink on the river.
This is what you guys have? Mm-hmm. I still drink the IPAs on the river, even though they're very heavy. These are a little bit bigger than the Can Koozie. If you want to use it, you can. If not, no big deal. I just like to do it for my advertising.
That'll work.
Cheers. Don't sip yet.
Cheers. Sorry. Didn't know the rules.
That's okay. You'll learn them real quick. So, yeah, this is actually a pretty refreshing beer with only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. So
that's why I drink it.
Michelob Ultra, if you want to sponsor, you know, you can just hit me up and we'll sponsor. We'll do a sponsorship. But today, this is going to be more of probably a serious podcast that we've ever really had, because your family in 2011 discovered something on the river, the Mississippi River, which is, right, for those who are listening, we're in Winona, Minnesota, literally right on the Mississippi River. So this is a true story, and it's now coming to light once again. What has it been, 15 years, 14 years now?
It'll be 14 on Labor Day.
14 years on Labor Day, and now it's coming back to surface again because there's more evidence. But this is your story more to tell, because in 2011, on September 5th, I believe it was, you and your family discovered a body on the Mississippi River.
You did.
And this is just, it's really crazy, because actually you kind of teach, you do teach science, but you teach more of a DNA aspect during certain times of the year because of the story. So in 2011, September 5th, you found a body on the river.
Correct.
Could you take us through this journey back, hopefully? And if I need to get Kleenexes, we can get some Kleenexes.
I'll be okay. It's
okay. It's that far past. Okay. So what happened on 2011, September 5th? How's your day start out?
Well, we had just moved here. We were here. That was our first summer that actually we took a boat out on the river. And we had always gone the other direction, which would be north into Wisconsin. And on that particular day, we had invited my brother and his family to come along. And he had five children, and the youngest was like three. And something delayed them. So we decided to go out, and it was myself, my husband, and my two boys, Caleb and Josh. Caleb had just turned 16, and Josh had just turned 14. So instead of going up the Wisconsin way on the river, we decided to go down south. Never been that way before. And as we're going down the river, we saw this bag floating. And Caleb says, you know, Mom, we should get that picked up. We shouldn't leave trash in the river. And
that's right.
He's right, but I was the one that said, just leave it, you know. So we went a little bit further down towards the Trempealeau area, and they have the, what do you call that there, the lock and dam.
Yep.
We didn't want to wait. So we headed back, and then we saw the same bag, but now it had slipped further down into the river, and Caleb was still like, let's go pick it up. We shouldn't leave trash in the river. So we took our boat over, and my other son, Joshua, 14-year-old son, was the one that pulled this canvas bag out of the boat. And he's kind of a prankster and a jokester, and all of a sudden I heard him say, Mom, Mom, there's a baby in here. And I looked at him and I said, don't joke about that, Josh. That's not funny. And I could tell by his face it was no joke. I mean, he was pitch white, eyes wide open, and he's sitting there holding, it looked like a doll, this baby in his hands. And all I remember saying was to my husband, drop anchor, somebody call 911. There was a boater, a fisherman near us. I don't even know who it was. But he came over to kind of stay with us while we were waiting for 911 to come. It was, I think it was the Winona Dive and Rescue Team County Sheriff. And anyway, this baby looked just like you took her out of the bathtub. Fully, no physical issues at all, just a perfectly formed little brand new newborn baby girl. And I took her and I tried to do CPR. It felt like it was forever that for Dive and Rescue to come. I'm sure it was probably only 15 or 20 minutes, but there was no signs of any head trauma. She still had umbilical cord attached, so we knew that it wasn't a birth at the hospital, that it had to have been a home birth or whatever.
Sure.
And there was still blood on the cord. So we know that we knew that she could not have been in the river very long. Plus, when we first went by it, the canvas bag was, I don't know, half to a third was floating above the water. And by the time we went down and turned around and came back, like maybe 10 minutes later, just the upper corner of it was there. So it was sinking pretty fast.
Okay.
And this baby was... You could tell that somebody in some sort of way, shape, or form cared about this baby, because in that bag there were porcelain angels. There was a medallion necklace, big one, that I later found out was supposed to be some sort of a symbol to help people pass to the afterlife.
Oh.
At least that's what I had heard about that.
So that would be most likely intentional.
Yeah, you could tell that it was intentional. The baby was wrapped very carefully in an old gunky T-shirt with all these angels packed around it and then packed in this canvas bag. The one thing I know for sure is that baby was never meant to be found. And we were, I don't know if we were at the right place at the right time, or if you look at it one way, or the wrong place at the wrong time, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
But Dive and Rescue and the county sheriff came and they took the baby. And then we went home that night. And this was the strangest part for me of the whole story. Then that night, as we were kind of talking about what had just happened and as a family, my youngest son, Josh, had said to me, you know, Mom, nobody should die without a name. We should name this girl, this baby girl. And I said, okay, well, what do you think we should name her? And I have a very extensive angel collection. And so Josh said, well, why don't we call her Angel? There were angels in there, and Mom, you collect angels. Mom, you always wanted a little girl. Just seemed perfect. So that night, we still would say prayers with the boys at night, and we prayed that night that we named her Baby Angel, that she would somehow, her family would be found, there would be closure to this, and we'd know what the story was. But what was so odd about that is the next morning, Officer Brand, who was the county sheriff at the time, called us because we needed to come in to give DNA and some other stuff down to the police. And he said to me, oh, by the way, Sharon, just so you know, in the press releases, we've named the baby. We're going to call her Angel.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I about fell off my chair. Like, are you kidding me? That's what the name we came up with last night as a family. So it's just so a lot of odd things. I mean, first of all, we'd never been on that side of the river. We were delayed. And then we named it Baby Angel, and then the sheriff's department had named it Baby Angel. So, yeah, that would be 14 years ago this Labor Day.
This Labor Day. Now, I got so many questions because you just moved to town that year?
We had been, We had been there a year,
okay.
But we had moved the summer before, but we didn't boat or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that summer, the first time we put the boat out was like in May. So we had just taken the boat out that summer.
Okay.
So we had never gone that side of the river.
Now, some of the things I've read in the stories you gave more detail about, you said that your son Josh actually picked the baby out of the mm-hmm. bag. Wow.
Yeah.
For a 14-year-old, that's about an eighth grader. That yes. seems pretty crazy to pick up a baby that is dead out of a bag.
I don't know if he knew it was dead. I don't know if he knew she was dead or not.
Okay.
I don't think any of us did in the moment.
Sure.
I did not see him unzip the bag and take her out. I just saw him holding her, saying, "Mom, there's a baby here. There's a dead baby here."
Wow. That's just nuts. And you said it looked like it just was almost born.
Perfectly formed.
Perfectly formed, baby.
Perfectly formed. I have learned since they had said that, actually, I just found this out very recently, as they have now indicted who they believe is the mother. And at the press conference about a month ago now, they had said that actually the baby was born alive, and I did not know that, and that she had suffered head trauma within a day or two. All this time I had maybe thought it was easier to believe the story that she was stillborn and mm-hmm. the mom.
Yeah, I go on NBCnews.com, and it said exactly what you just said, that there was, believed to be head trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, when I read that, it sounds like the baby was either hit against or with something and then put into the bag and then put into the river, which sounds...
Yeah, we don't know that part of the story. That's one thing I hope in time. I guess I feel like our family is entitled to know that, what truly happened to her. What's the story between there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with it being a newborn baby, your skull is very pliable. So it would have had to have been something fairly major to have the head trauma. And they also said the baby had bleeding on the brain.
Okay.
Now, when we saw her in the river, there wasn't any bruising. There wasn't anything to indicate anything.
Sure. And then you said when you saw the bag floating, the next time you saw it was actually lower in the water?
Yeah, it was sinking.
Okay, so was there water then, I assume, going into the bag?
The water, yeah, the bag was saturated. The baby was
sure.
all wet.
So it's so weird in that you just... And was it in the middle of the river? Or was it like up against the shoreline kind
no,
of?
No, it was in the... We were, I don't know, maybe half mile? I'm not very good at distances that way. We could see the shoreline for where we were at.
So this bag was in the middle of the river?
It was in the middle of the river.
Oh, wow. See, now I could understand if I would see a bag kind of floating against the sandbars, mm-hmm. against the trees.
Nope.
So that's even nope. crazier, because that is right. You know, when your son saw, hey, there's a bag floating, maybe we should get it. Most people don't usually, like, if something flies out of their boats, like a towel, and they'll sink right away. Shirt sinks right away. Beer cans or soda cans float. To see a duffel bag on the river would be odd for myself.
Well, it really wasn't a duffel bag. It was it's kind of one of those canvas bags that when you go to, this one happened to be from Mexico, some resort down in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
One of those larger canvas bags that sometimes you get, like
yep.
a souvenir bag. So it wasn't a duffel bag. And it was, I don't know, maybe 20 inches by 20 inches.
Okay.
24 by 24.
And was there a bunch of porcelain angels in there?
There were three porcelain angels in there. There was a necklace she had on her. There was some burnt incense sticks in there too.
Okay.
And then she was wrapped in a green, an old green T-shirt that later the police had told me had like an old logo of some sort of like a loaf of bread.
Okay.
You couldn't tell it had been washed so much that you couldn't see it.
Sure.
And I know that they tried to track down maybe where that came from, and they also tried to track down where the canvas bag, the connection to, I don't remember anymore what it was, but it's some resort in Mexico. And then they also tried to track down the origins of the porcelain angels, maybe where they came from.
Okay. Yeah, and so now the next question I'm sitting here thinking is, your son, Josh, has this traumatic experience. How was the following days after that for him? Do you remember any of those things, or did he speak up on that? That was kind of traumatic, or did he not really, didn't really faze him because he felt like he was helping out maybe?
It was, I don't know how to explain it. It's, you hear about sometimes when people say they have like out of body experiences.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, it was like that because it felt like we were watching this and not part of it.
Sure.
And there was, I don't know how to explain that. And I think we talked a lot as a family about it for quite a while after. I mean, Josh never sought help, but it was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, if he ever had any nightmares or anything, he never spoke of it.
Okay.
Nowadays, I mean, 14 years later, he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to revisit it. He just says, been there, done that, move past it.
Sure.
I don't want to bring up all those old emotions. And I totally get that because I kind of had felt the same way here I knew a year ago that they had a track on who the person was through DNA. And then it took a whole year, almost exactly a whole year later before the woman that has been indicted or brought up on charges. And when I went to that press conference that day, it was just like all the old emotions that I thought I had moved past, man, all came flooding back. I was kind of surprised, and it was like reliving this in the moment again. So, yeah, our family is still feeling that.
Okay. This Caleb's been on the podcast for those who have listened. He was the guy that talked about cornhole.
Yeah.
Does he have much recollection of that? Because he was a little bit older, a couple years older.
Yeah, he does. Actually, we've done a few interviews with some local mm-hmm. TV yeah. stations. We did one out of Rochester. In the early years, we did a lacrosse one. Caleb is much more willing to talk about it because I think it helped him to get through it.
Sure.
With him being an expectant dad right now,
yeah.
I think it's a little near and dear his heart to realize, you know, that's a life.
Right, yeah.
That was a life that should have had a chance to live.
Now, you're saying that they have ways of, they had DNA now? They can test for that?
Well, 14 years ago, they were, like I said, they were trying to track down the bag, the mm-hmm. angels, all of that sort of stuff. And what's interesting, because I teach 7th and 8th grade life science, and part of what we teach is genetics. And so every year with my students, I have been really upfront and talking about this. Every year we go to, in Winona has a cemetery walk. So every time that we're out there, I take them by Baby Angel's grave, and we talk about it. And I have said every year that I believe the only way this case will ever get broken is through some sort of genetic genealogy, somehow of tracking her down. And that is exactly what happened, was a genealogy company, I don't remember which one, and I don't know if the police reached out to them, or I don't know the logistics of it. But through this genealogy company, it led them to what they thought potentially could be the mother. She was the right age, living in Winona. There was some DNA markers to say, might be a relative. And so the police had approached her, and she said, well, let me think about it. They came back later, and she had lawyered up at that point.
Of course.
So they did a dumpster dive to get her DNA, if you will.
Oh, they went to the dumpsters.
Yeah. Well, they got a dumpster dive. They got a female product from her
uh-huh.
that they sent uh-huh. off to the crime lab up in Minneapolis, and it came back that this is probably the match. And so then they got a court order to officially get her DNA. And that was about a year ago.
Okay.
And I knew at that point that there was I think it was like a 99.5% DNA match. And it was just a matter of time before an indictment. I was kind of wondering, because it took a year, that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 3 weeks ago, I got a call before the press conference. The Officer Ganrud now, because Officer Brand is retired,
yep.
called to let me know that they were going to make an arrest.
Okay.
So a little bit of a heads up on that.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing I was looking at, and I, exactly what you said, is that they got DNA testing. And I was wondering how they did that, because I do know that once your trash goes out on the street, it's public.
Yep.
And I know that because of a neighbor when I was younger. They dumped in the trash. They literally came out by our neighbor's house, dumped the trash in the trunk, left.
Oh, you saw that with the police?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
well, my
wow.
dad did. My dad did, not me. And so I do know that when it goes out there, You can just dump it and go.
You see that on TV all the time, you know, Dateline and things like that. Sure. I watch a lot of Dateline, and you see that all the time. That's how they collect DNA evidence, at least enough to point to this is a possible suspect.
So did they take a DNA test of the baby then, after all this had happened right away?
I don't know. I would suspect they probably did, that they would have had her DNA profile. They had an original autopsy. I didn't know a lot about it. And then about the time of the getting of the DNA, they had a new or a different forensic, somebody that does an autopsy review all the information on that. So they re-looked at all of that. I don't know if they did DNA on the baby. I would think they would have, though.
I would assume that's kind of how they figured it out, because I was wondering that at the same time. They must have had some DNA sample just trying to figure out what's going to happen. But, yeah, it's 14 years later.
Yeah, I mean, DNA research was there back 14 years ago. Probably not as well developed as it is now, but it was able. They would have been able to.
Yeah, there's something about Firebird Forensics Group.
Okay.
So to see whether genetic genealogy might uncover a relative. So that, that is crazy. And I know we do the cemetery walk with the 7th and 8th graders. We always go by there. And then they named her baby Angel. It was a girl, right?
Yep.
Okay, little girl. So now I want to go back, because you're a teacher and it's Labor Day weekend. So that means you're going back to school that Tuesday to teach. How does that then go for you after this huge discovery, I'm assuming on a Saturday, Sunday? A couple days later, you had to go teach
kids.
Actually,
it was Monday, and I think it was the next day we were in school. Or it was Sunday, and we were in school on Tuesday.
Sure.
I can't quite remember on that. Well, it was in the news. So it was like the talk of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the parents, all the teachers, you know, what was going on. And some of them knew it was our family, and some of them didn't. I mean, our family's name wasn't really put out there. So, I mean, it was more like, I felt like that's all we were talking about over and over and over and over and over again.
Sure.
So the emotions kind of came more in those quiet moments when you're lost in your own thoughts and your own head. I think that's where it was more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of funny, because how I remember that day crystal clear. I remember all the events. I remember that. But the one thing I don't remember very well was how, I guess, I emotionally was that day. I thought I was very calm, cool, and collected, like, okay, here's the baby, let's do DNA, or not DNA, let's do CPR, call 911, and, you know, that's how I'm remembering I operated. But my husband was like, no, you were crying the whole time, you know, you were really upset. And I don't recall that. But that's weird. That's the part I don't recall.
Right. Well, there's so many things.
My emotional reaction.
There's just so many things going through your head, you forget how you were actually reacting. So how did your husband, Randy, how did he take all this? Or was he kind of just in shock as well?
Yeah,
or?
He just kind of sat back and watched it all unfold.
Yeah.
He never held the baby. I held baby Angel until Dive and Rescue came.
Okay.
We had a towel blanket on the boat. So I wrapped her in that and held her the whole time. And until the press conference, though, the one thing that's always bothered me was the thought of, you know, was she alive? If we would have stopped when I first saw the bag versus later, could we have prevented that? And so at the press conference, to find out that she was born alive but had head trauma, would have been dead in the water, you know, reaching the water. There wasn't anything we could have done to save her. So there's a little bit of comfort in that, but for 14 years, I've really struggled with that.
Sure.
Kind of like blaming myself, blaming our family, like, why didn't we do that when we first saw it? The what ifs.
Well, yeah, when I read the article, now that I read that and I hear about the head trauma, which we didn't know about, I would have just assumed suffocation, because I assumed the bag was sealed up or zipped up.
Yeah, it was zipped, but it was a canvas bag. So
yeah, so there might have been a little bit of air coming in, but eventually you're going to run out of oxygen.
I think it's just because it was easier for me to emotionally handle it. I thought the baby was probably stillborn. Mother loved it, wrapped it in these angels, you know, and rather than going through a burial, she buried it at sea. I could be a little bit more understanding and sympathetic to that.
Yeah.
So when I heard that, no, the baby was born alive and there was head trauma.
Yeah.
It brought up a lot of emotions in me, that a lot of anger that wasn't there, hadn't been there for 14 years. I still would really like to know what happened. There may be, maybe there was a legit reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever know that story. I'm thinking the police might, but then, you
sure.
know, so it was just her and the baby. If it was just her and the baby, then it's just her story.
Yeah. Well, and then so you teach children. And one thing in one of the articles it said is, this was last year's article. I think it's from KAL out of Eau Claire, I think this might be. But anyways, it said.
Yeah, I never interviewed with them.
Well, it was whoever KAL is, and I thought it was Eau Claire, but if not, it's ABC. And the one thing that I realize now, and you're saying all this, is that last year she would have been around, you know, the 13-year-old mark, and they would have been yep. classmates with those students, possibly, or at least maybe in the public school or a different school, so you actually may have known that. So that was something I didn't even think twice about.
Yeah, I have said that. I even said that this fall. To the 7th and 8th graders, I said, you know, she would have been old enough to be your classmate. I said, look at right next, that seat right next to you. It could have been her.
Right, yeah.
But she's not here. And at that point, we didn't know, I mean, the story per se. So they were really engaged in that. And so I had to leave school, as you very well know.
Mm-hmm.
I had to leave, well, I didn't have to, but I chose to leave school to go to that press conference. And so I briefly had said something to our 7th and 8th graders, and then I came back and I told them immediately from the press conference what it was. And, I mean, they've been on that journey, so to speak, with me. I mean, it's a life lesson that they're learning through this. We did talk about how precious life is and how all life is given from God, and it is not up to us to decide, you know, who gives life and who takes life. But, again, I don't know the story. But how precious life actually is.
Is there any of those students that have ever really, it's really hit home with them at all? Or is there, are they kind of like, oh, okay, I kind of understand it, but I don't? Because they are 7th and 8th graders, so.
I think the realization that they were she would have been the same age as them kind of hit home a little bit. Like, oh my goodness, that could have been, you know.
Could have been my friend, classmate. Yeah.
Could have been somebody at the park with me.
Sure.
And some of them that had maybe a family member or a mom that maybe had lost a baby along the way, that hurt.
Sure.
They could feel that hurt a little bit. I know we have one in our class whose mother had a miscarriage. And so they understand what that meant, that a baby was lost.
Yeah.
So that was troublesome for them.
Sure. So when you went to the press conference just a few weeks back, where was it and what was that like? Who was all there, I guess?
What's the pavilion down by Gaybrick Park area?
Oh, gosh. I forget what that one's called, but I know where you're talking about.
Yeah, it was
about.
A pavilion down there, and county sheriff was there. Both sheriffs were there. Officer Brand, who's retired, was there. Somebody from the Minnesota FBI, forensics. There was a bunch of people there that did the press conference, and then a whole bunch of press.
Yeah.
So none of them knew who I was, which was good.
Oh, really?
Nope. It wasn't about me at all. But after the press cleared out a little bit, I hadn't seen Officer Brand in a number of years. So I went up to him and I just said, remember me? He goes, oh, yeah, of course I do. And he reached out and gave me a really big hug. And I kind of whispered in his ear. I said, you know, 14 years ago, you made me a promise that you would never let this go, that you would find who the mother was. And he said, and I will do that before I die. So I kind of whispered in his ear, thank you for still being alive. Well, and he laughed and we laughed. And, you know, he says, of course. He said, this, in the press, it has been put out like it's a cold case.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, it never was. They were always trying to find this out. So it's pretty cool. I don't know if the people of Winona truly realize, I am so impressed with Officer Brand and Officer Gangrud. Most places would be like, you know what? It's a baby. We have no idea. Just cold case it and it may never get solved.
Sure.
They never did. They spent countless hours on that. I mean, to me, those two are truly heroes of it all.
Yeah. Well, you know, in a bigger town, it might be that way because one of many, but, you know, in a town of 27-ish thousand people, we're all, and I said this many times talking to people on here, I'm like, we're a community, we're a kind of a family in here. A lot of people know each other. You go to the store, say hi to a lot of people out there. It's not like if you were to live in Minneapolis, it's just, someone died today, yeah. You know, and it's unfortunate to even say that. But I remember, yeah, you were talking about Dave Brand, and yeah, he was our sheriff at the time, I believe, and now mm-hmm. it's Ganroot, and they kept on this for 14 years, which is actually quite impressive because, like you said, they could have just said, we don't know, it's going to be tough to figure out, but they kept on this, which is nice.
And almost every year, well, I would say probably the first 5 or 6 years, they would call us and give us some updates of where mm-hmm. they were at. And then as the years went on, it wasn't as often, but they would always let us know, you know, what they were working on, et cetera. And for the first, I don't actually know how long, but for the first 5 or 6 years, they did set up a memorial service every Labor Day out at the cemetery at Baby Angel's grave, and we would come every year. And Officer Brand and Officer Gamrud have set up a fund so that there is always flowers at her grave.
Okay.
And they have done that for 14 years out of their own pocket.
Sure.
I just, who does that? I'm just amazed by those two.
Now, the Baby Angel's grave is at Woodlawn, correct?
Woodlawn, correct.
Yep. And how long has that been there for? Has it been there since day one, or did it just come recently?
No.
Because it is in the newer part, right?
Yeah, it's in the newer part. Okay. And from what I understand, Woodlawn Cemetery basically donated that plot of land.
Okay.
It's in a very prominent spot. It's a new spot. It's under a tree. It's, yeah, it's like the first... Mm-hmm. The first memorial that you'd see as you walk over there.
Sure.
And that very first year, excuse me, with Labor Day, like I said, that happened on Labor Day. And then if you spiral ahead to, it was the week of Easter, they arranged for a funeral and a burial for her. And I have never, and I've been to a number of funerals in my life, but I've never seen anything like this. It was at the, I can't remember, the one on Broadway. I don't know if it's the Presbyterian. The big one there in the corner.
Is it Central?
No.
Not the one where I take the kids?
No. It's about 3 or 4 blocks down from St. Martin's.
Okay.
Anyway, the place was packed. I mean, just absolutely full. And I'm like, oh my goodness, these are people in the Winona community that don't know. They have no connection to this little girl.
Sure.
But there were hundreds of people there. But the most amazing thing was from there all the way out to Woodlawn Cemetery, you know how they'll do a caravan of
yep.
of mourners or such? But it was like, all you could see up and down the street for the miles going there was fire trucks, EMTs, ambulance, state patrol, police from not just Winona, but from all over that went out there to take this little girl to, at that point then, there was the headstone was there and everything, that they had a burial service there for her. But I was just, wow. And that was on Easter weekend, where a lot of people have families and
mm-hmm.
family obligations, but the community really turned out for her.
Yeah.
Josh did a eulogy, and I did a eulogy for her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you spoke
they had asked us to.
Oh, that was nice. Yeah. Now, how many years after was that, the same year?
That was the same year.
Okay.
So it was Labor Day in September to April.
April-ish.
Whenever Easter
2012?
Was. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's not that far off, and Josh has still been about 14 or 15 years old.
He still would have been 14.
Okay.
Because his birthday's in May.
Well, that's pretty impressive that he gave a eulogy, because not a whole lot of... I know, because the teachers have the 8th graders, and most of them would not want to give any sort of speech in front of people.
Yeah, he did.
Especially a eulogy, so that's actually...
It was actually... He wrote it all himself. I think he still has it someplace, but it was... I was, as a teacher, not just because he was my son, but as a teacher, I was really impressed with mm-hmm. what he... I can't remember exactly now what it was, but I mean, like, there wasn't a dry eye in the place. That wasn't his purpose of it.
Sure.
He actually did a really good job talking about how life is precious, and as a Christian, you support life. And
sure.
So, I mean, he let his faith come through on that, which I was very impressed with a 14-year-old boy that went through this trauma. One, was willing to do it, and two, did a fabulous job. I've had a couple of people reach out, like people I don't even know off of Facebook that apparently had attended that funeral, and they have said, actually one very recently said, I remember your son's eulogy. It drove me to tears.
Wow, that's impressive.
I mean, and that's 14 years ago. So, yeah.
So now
I thought, well, his drove you to tears, but mine didn't. And I'm okay with that.
Well, that's what a 14-year-old can do to you, yeah. I guess. So now you said every year they have a memorial service at the gravesite?
Yeah, I don't know if they've continued it, but they did it for the first 6 years. Okay. We stopped going after that. So I don't know if they've done it every year since. Okay. I suspect they probably have. But, yeah, we went, and then as time went on, you know, life became different. And
sure.
So we didn't go out there as much.
So as someone that teaches science now, is this kind of an it's not exciting because of the situation, but exciting because of how far possibly DNA testing has come. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a cool situation, I guess, that maybe we can put two and two together and figure this situation out. Is it kind of neat to see that aspect happen?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be better if it was in a better situation, but.
Well, and I've told, this is the honest to goodness truth. I have said this to our class, 7th and 8th graders, that, you know, if I was their age or a little bit older, I've been a teacher all my life, but I truly am really drawn to and fascinated. I probably, if I had a choice nowadays, I would go into like what they call forensics genealogy, that where they track down, and I'm just amazed how they do that. That's how they found the Golden State Killer.
Sure.
Out in California was by genetic genealogy, mm-hmm. tracing it down, and they found a relative, and then it's amazing how they do that. I'm so fascinated by that, so which is how this came about with Baby Angel, and I think more and more of that will be there as genetics is just, it's an explosive field right now.
So as someone that's not big into science and genetics, and I don't know much about it, I know I feel like you could, all you have to do is spit into a tube and they can tell your whole background. Oh, yeah. Is it that simple?
Well, it doesn't take much to get your, and it's evolving more and more. It used to be they needed a pretty good sample.
What would a pretty good sample mean?
Oh, like back, I'm thinking the O.J. Simpson trial, which was the first one that used any kind of DNA.
Sure.
From what I understand it, I mean, it had to be a pretty good blood drop or whatever,
okay.
And it had to be what they call a viable sample. And nowadays, they can get it from a piece of hair, fingernails, anything that has your cells that they can capture DNA. They can even capture DNA from like what they call touch DNA. So if you just touch something,
simple as that.
Yeah, yeah, they can pull up a DNA profile. Wow. It's amazing what they can do.
That's a lot.
It's kind of scary, but it's amazing what they can do.
Yeah, it can be scary in an aspect and good in another aspect, yeah. Like this situation.
So it's solved a lot of crimes.
Yeah. So now, from what I've been reading here, and it's kind of baffling my mind, this is the newest report, and this is from April 24th of 25. The mom that they suspect was charged with this murder, but it doesn't seem like it's a whole heck of a lot of discipline, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I'm reading something. I read something that was like about 48 months at most.
Yeah, I think right now that's... I'm typically not an angry person, but that does anger me.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the state of Minnesota for a manslaughter charge, they could get up to 10 years. I don't know why it's only 48 months. But yeah, that is the maximum, and they said that at the news conference, the maximum possible penalty for that is a 48 months.
Wow.
And that is if that is the maximum, if it goes to trial or a bench trial or whatever she decides to do. You know, the possibility if she pleads it down, it could be less than that.
Wow.
She goes in front of the judge on, I believe it's July 7th, to plead. So
it's coming up here in the next couple
so
months.
I don't know if she's going to plead not guilty or what's going to come of that.
Sure,
so.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I was surprised with the 48 months. I think the life of a baby is worth a whole lot more than that. But
did they ever say what the reasoning was? Was it because the case is so old?
I don't know. I do know that there were some other charges that have timed out, if you will. Statute of limitations is
okay.
Gone by.
Yeah,
so they charged her with the bigger charges, like one of them, and I'm assuming this might be one that is past the timeline. Would be improper. I don't know exactly what it is, but the improper disposal of a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in a river. That is a I don't know if it's a misdemeanor. I don't know. Sure. But she could have been charged with that. I suspect that that's one that probably fell off in the timeline. Okay. She was not charged with that. But, I mean, there were some smaller things. So,
okay.
But still with the bigger ones, it's 48 months.
That's,
I wrestle with that one. That one is probably right now the most difficult for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
Because that, I don't know the story, but that baby did die in with her. So mm-hmm. she, whatever happened by her hand, there's a death of a human being.
Right. Yeah, and I'm looking at it. It says that there was an unconditional bail set at $200,000 and a lower conditional set at $20,000. $20,000 seems very low. $200 seems like a lot, but I don't know how bail works. And then it says, yeah, if convicted, face presumptive sentence of 48 months. So it seems really low for the whole
what
case.
What I don't know is she has charged with two, I'm not sure how, where the, I don't know how this works, but there are two misdemeanor charges for her, and I don't know if it's 48 months combined or 48 months for each, because there's two charges on her.
Sure.
And I don't know how that works.
Was there anything ever brought up about a dad at all? Or?
At the press conference, one of the, I'm not sure who asked, somebody asked about the dad. And obviously there is a dad, but they said at this time there is nothing to... He's not indicted. They're not really looking at him.
Sure. Okay.
So they would have the DNA. Obviously, they would have the DNA.
Yeah. And I was wondering, does the guy even know? I mean, obviously, he would probably know now, but at the time, did he know what was going on?
I have no idea.
That's
the one thing that somebody had asked me this a while back, you know, where I'm at on this. And for 13, 14 years, I think my prayer has always been that this baby has a name, that they find out the story, that the mother owns up to whatever happened. Now, since she has been brought up on charges, I really feel, my heart really goes out to, she has two daughters. She now has a husband. She was, from my understanding, was not married at the time. And the grandparents, because I will bet most of them, if not all of them, have absolutely no idea that this baby existed.
Mm-hmm.
And with, like, now my son being pregnant or, you know, going to have a baby, going to be a first-time grandma, I'm like, oh, my goodness, to not know that you had a grandchild, to find it out in such a way, yeah. My heart goes out for her family. They have got to be absolutely traumatized by this and absolutely devastated.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you kind of forget about thinking about that kind
of
stuff.
That was one of the first things I thought about. I was like, I felt for her two little girls because they have a sister they probably did not know even existed.
Sure. Yeah, you don't even think about that kind of stuff.
And what a way to find that your mom was the one responsible for her death.
Yeah, that'd be... You kind of have a little pit in your stomach, like, oh, could have been us, possibly. But, you know, I guess we'll never know. And obviously, yeah, there's a different time in this person's life. And if you want to look who it is, you can look it up on the internet. You'll say the name right away. So I'm not going to say it here. Yeah. People can figure it out if they'd like to.
Well, and I've seen sometimes, you know, people post on Facebook and all of that. And one, I don't usually comment, but I did comment on this one where it wasn't even anybody I knew, but they posted something like, leave her alone. She was just a young girl at the time. And you know, when you're young, you make bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
And my response was, she was a 28-year-old woman at the time. So she wasn't that young. And there were other choices she had.
Sure. Well, one of those choices, and this is going to be one of those controversial topics, is the whole abortion portion of saying, well, if that would have been a legal thing, you could have done that, you know, and this is a reason for that. And I know where you're going to come from at this from a standpoint of being a Christian. So what would you say to someone that would say that, I guess? Because I know you said that life is precious. And,
yeah.
And
well, I think that's absolutely wrong. I mean, I think it's a death either way. But at least I wish she would have sought some medical care, mm-hmm. medical help on that. It's funny you say that because at one of the TV interviews, Caleb actually talked about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then after the interview, I said, you know, they're not going to broadcast that. It's too political. It's too religious. He goes, I know. And I just needed to tell him that, though, that, you know, what he was coming at it with, it makes no sense that this woman could dispose of her baby mm-hmm. at the time. We thought it was at birth, but now we know a day yep. or two later. While she could have, here in the wonderful state of Minnesota, gone all the way 9 months and said, I don't want the baby. And then it would have been okay. And he was saying, this makes no sense. You know, a baby is a baby is a baby.
Mm-hmm, sure. And one thing about Caleb I know is he'll speak his mind.
Oh, yeah. But I told him, I said, it will not be broadcast. And it wasn't.
And it wasn't? No, okay. When was that?
That would have been recently? A year ago.
A year ago, okay.
It would have been a year. It wasn't this time.
I bet it's this one right here.
He was at both of them.
Okay.
A year ago, when the DNA was bringing to light, we got interviewed by, it was KTTC out of Rochester. And then KTTC reached out to us after the press conference.
Sure.
There, I just made a plug for KTTC.
They can sponsor if they need to or come on here. Yeah. You know, here's funny, actually. I just typed in baby angel to see, and AI knows what baby angel is.
Oh, what does it say? What does he say? It say.
Okay, well, I went on there first, and then first thing I typed in was just baby angel, and it took me to Reddit as well, and there's people on there commenting about it just 19 days ago, so not very long ago. They were commenting about who the person is, and they're like, well, she wasn't a very happy person anyways to begin with. She was my professor, this, that, and the other thing.
Oh, I've read some things, yeah, from that angle about, I also know that sometimes your most disgruntled students are going to be the ones that'll put stuff out there.
Oh,
your happier students generally don't.
All right.
We know that as teachers.
Oh, yeah, I know. All right, so AI, if I type in just baby angel, that's all I typed in, says baby angel can refer to several different things, including a newborn girl found dead in the Mississippi River and named baby angel by investigators, according to NBC News. It can also refer to a musical song by Troye Sivan or the artistic depiction of cherubs and putti, P-U-T-T-I, which are winged baby figures often associated with innocence and purity. So if you type that into, that's what AI comes up with on Google.
It's pulling up part of that story.
It's pulling up part of it as well, yeah. So, and then if you click down, there's even more to it. It talks about the song, talks about the infant, talks about artistic depictions, parental terms, and stuff like that. So
I remember 14 years ago, I'll just say 14 years ago, we just happened to catch on national news, and you know who Nancy Grace is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had a little blurb about a baby found in the Mississippi.
No kidding.
Yeah, so there, when you asked about national, but that was the only time I heard it. It was just a little bit of blurb, and it was like, what are the headlines?
Right, yeah.
But I was like, wow, Nancy Grace.
So would you have thought that day in the Mississippi River that what you found in the river would make national news, and also now it's on AI?
No.
I would never have thought that myself.
It warms my heart that, like on a national, that people are that concerned about a baby.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, there's a lot of people that it's just a baby.
Right, yes.
So, I mean, you know, it just tells you that there are still people that look at life as...
And, you know, it's the same thing with even dogs and animals. Some people, you know, they would think of a dog as, oh, that, you know, if you're on a farm, I know this because of old school mentality. Oh, it's a dog. It helps me. It works for me. And then when it's done, take him behind the barn and, you know, shoot him. And then there's other people such as myself who we just had to put down our dog. Totally. And same with you.
Yeah,
except for, you know, he passed away in his sleep. But it's a family member at that point. So it is so much different how
that's
everyone
sees
it.
That emotional connection.
And there's other cultures that eat dogs.
I know.
Well, and then that's just the case. And we eat cows and we think, you know, obviously we love that it gave its life for us to eat a hamburger.
There are some
steaks.
Cultures that don't eat cows, though.
That's true, too. And so they're on the flip side of what we're thinking about at the same time. So now as we're starting to wind down, let's go off to a happier thing. You're now going to be a grandma, as you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And Caleb, as I mentioned earlier, the cornhole guy that was been on a few months ago, he's going to have his first child, and that's going to be your first grandchild. Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad are, when this podcast airs, they'll already be grandparents because it'll not be this coming Monday. It'll be the following one. And what are your thoughts on that now? Excitement? Joy? I can only imagine.
It's still a little bit, the title grandma. Is it going to take me a little bit?
Does it make you feel old?
Yes, it does.
Uh-oh.
Very much.
Oh, no.
Very much. But I think it's exciting. I'm happy for them. What's kind of cool, too, is the baby is due on my birthday. So I'm like, oh, cool. I'll share my birthday.
That's awesome, then.
So we'll see what happens. And congratulations to you early.
Yeah.
Because in a couple of days, you're going to be a dad. I'm excited for you, too.
And she's coming on the podcast once Stephanie's ready to come on. We're going to bring the baby on. Sit right next to where you're sitting right now. And
fall on the couch.
Probably fall right in. But we'll have her on the little booster seat or the little carrier. Yeah. So Stephanie can talk about pregnancy and how it's like at 37, because she's a geriatric pregnancy. Yeah. And everyone's telling her how difficult it's going to be. And we're about to find out if it's going to be difficult or not. But so far, I feel like her pregnancy has gone pretty decent. Mm-hmm. She hasn't had any, like, she had a little bit of, like, nausea, morning sicknesses, but they kind of went away. The cravings that were normal, so I think she's having a normal pregnancy.
I had Caleb at 34, so I can relate to her. She's okay.
So Caleb was at 34.
Yeah.
And that means Josh would have been at about 36.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you know exactly how she's feeling, possibly.
I do. But age is just a number in some ways.
So what do you think is going to be the best part about being a grandma?
Being able to spoil the child and send him home, him or her home.
Yeah. Diaper's dirty. Here you go.
Yep. And not, actually getting a good night's sleep.
That's true. You get to just have the joys.
With the newborn, I just remember Caleb was actually really easy because it was about, 6-8 weeks, and he was sleeping 10-12 hours. And I remember thinking, well, that's not so bad. And then Josh came along, and he literally was almost age 4 before he'd sleep the night. And it wasn't that he was hungry. He just would always keep us up. He's still kind of that kind of a kid, if you will. Just the restless one. So I think that's why we had Caleb first, because if it was flipped, I don't know if we would have went for number 2.
But, that's true. I don't know either.
Caleb was really a really easy baby.
My parents said I was too, so I'm hoping our daughter will be as well, because they said, "Oh, you were so easy to take care of," and and I was a late nighter. I always, I tell people, "Oh, you got a bedtime at 8 o'clock, and you're at eighth grade or sixth grade." I'm like, when I went to bed, I was 7 years old, so I was in first grade. I would go to bed. I would watch the news with my dad, 10 o'clock news. And then David Letterman would come on.
Oh.
And I knew that if I got past the first guest, past the first intro and the first guest was on, it was pretty late. I knew it was about 11 o'clock at that point. And as my mom always says, Jacobsons don't need any sleep. They don't need it. So I hope my daughter doesn't think the same thing. I hope she sleeps.
See, I'm a big night owl too. Caleb is too. Caleb,
I know you are.
I'm a night owl.
Yep.
Like midnight, 1 o'clock. And then in the morning when the alarm clock goes off, I'm like, why did I do that? But I do it every night, and I
same thing. Last night, we got done with our fine arts fair, and I had a softball game, and it was actually running late. So about 8:30 at night, it finally started. And then obviously each team had to score 20 plus runs, so I didn't get home until at least 10:20, and finally went to bed at about 11:30 and got up at 4:45 for the gym. And I do the same thing. I go, oh man, this stinks. But you know what I always say is, once I get my 2 feet on the ground, I'm good to go, and I can roll out. I'm good.
Well, I'm going to be retiring soon. So I was talking to my sister, who's already retired, and I said, what's the best thing about retirement? And her first comment was, no alarm clock. So I'm looking forward, more than anything, I'm counting down how many days I have to have my alarm clock on. I get up at 5:45. And being a night person, I don't like 5:45.
I always tell students, morning shouldn't even exist. Things should just start after about 10 a.m.
If I just let myself be normal, it's more like I go to bed easily 1-2 in the morning.
What time would you get up then if there's no alarm clock? 9 o'clock is about time, yeah.
And then maybe take a nap, although I don't take naps now, but if I could, I would.
Well, you might have to in the future, because you're now retiring from your career of teacher, principal, and I am now shifting into a different role myself, which is full-time real estate, rental properties, and you're actually the one that hired me you and the pastor hired me for my job 10 years ago. So it's been a decade.
We've never regretted it, because you've been pretty phenomenal.
Well, I remember doing the interview. That was kind of interesting. I got in, and it was in the pastor's office. It was just you. I do. It was you in one chair, pastor in his desk, and me there. And you called me one day, and actually I was coming back from real estate continuing education. I was coming through Rochester, And I was the basketball coach prior to that year. And Brian Polzine, who we sold his house for him, actually, and we're about to buy that old house back, which is funny. It's right behind the office
there.
Yeah, we're about to buy that back. And he said, you guys said, well, you had a good rapport with the students and with the parents, and that usually isn't the case. It's usually one likes you, the other doesn't, and vice versa. And so, yes, if I wanted to teach, and I did, and then it was contractual, and then eventually turned into, well, if you want to stay, you got to do your call. So I did all these colloquy classes, and it was, I remember taking those classes. I hadn't taken a religion class since eighth grade. So it was different, but yeah, and then it turned into a whole decade long, and it feels like it was just yesterday when I started. Because the fun thing is I've brought back some of my friends, like Chief of Police Officer Hurley. He's come and done his police stuff there with me for my health class. I always thought it was always good to bring in alumni to say, hey, these people came from this school. Here's what they're doing. Here's what you can do.
I always liked
how
you did that real world connection.
Yeah. So that was really fun. But, you know, as we're concluding here, is there other anything else you'd like to say about the whole Baby Angel case, that any summary or any last thoughts or feelings you might be having?
The one thing I struggle with, and I haven't really resolved it in my mind yet, as you touched on the fact with the 48 months, part of me feels like I want this to go full forward, trial, go for the full 48 months to get the max. But then that means it wraps us, our family, into that whole process.
Sure.
Which I really would rather not be part of that. But then if we're not and it gets plead, then, you know, I don't know that she'll get much. So I have both feelings on both sides. I don't know how I want this to proceed. So, I mean, it'll proceed how it's meant to. But
sure.
I struggle with that a little bit. I just, more than anything, and I, in some ways, I feel our family deserves to know this, is the story behind it. Because in some ways, that baby almost felt like part of our family.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we were just with her for a little while, I mean, we were the last loving people that held her.
Sure, yeah.
That spent time with her, you know, and we didn't abandon her. We didn't throw her away.
Sure, yeah.
So we feel like kind of a personal connection. And Randy and I had always tried for child number three, so there is that with being older.
Okay.
We always wanted a little girl, so it kind of hit my heart maybe a little bit harder. That that could have been our child,
right? Yeah,
and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Well, it'll be interesting what happens in July, how it proceeds from here. But
yeah, all right. Well,
I just want the story.
That's great. And closure, probably too.
Yeah, more than anything. I mean, I'm trying not to judge what happened because I don't know what happened from birth to the head trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was it her? Was somebody else involved? Was it an accident? You know, there's lots of things I don't know. I sincerely hope it wasn't because you didn't want the baby and you took matters into your own hands.
Sure.
Don't know that. I hope not. But I do hope that that story is honest and somehow comes to light.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Yep. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and actually sharing your story, because
cheers.
Not everyone would possibly come in and just and share something with that much connection. But for those who are out there listening, I will plug in the show notes. I'll put in the news article stories so you can click on it, read it, if you'd like to follow some of this case, because it's still developing yet and we never know where it's going to go. But for those who are listening out there, as the screen says, like, share, subscribe, and 5-star. It does help out the podcast for the algorithms to maybe shoot me up there, because you never know who's coming on. We have many different stories, many different backgrounds. But this has been another episode of Brews and Crews. And I want to thank Sharon one more time by giving her a cheers.
Cheers.
We'll see you on the river. Have a good night.
Maybe.